Support for Talking Art on WVIK comes from the people at Quad City Bank and Trust, helping the local community with their banking and financial needs for more than 20 years. Information is at qcbt.com. Support also comes from the estate of Margaret Skinner, a longtime friend of WVIK and lover of the arts.
Carolyn Martin, and I'm talking art today with William Campbell, a composer, performer, and professor of music at St. Ambrose University. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Now, you recently arranged the music for the Harmar Superstar concert performance at the Rust Belt, which is a modern and very exciting collaborative event with the Quad City Symphony Orchestra on Saturday, May 11th. How did you get involved with this project?
Yeah, well, I've done a few projects with the Quad City Symphony over the years. And some of them have been outreach for educational reasons. Like, we brought in Midori one time, and I had a composition contest that was a lot of fun. I've written a couple pieces for the Quad City Symphony that they've played, both in their Masterwork series and also for chamber concerts. So they reached out to me and asked if I would be interested in arranging for them. And that's a fun thing to do, is to arrange other people's music for, so that more people can enjoy it. You know, it's an interesting concert because Quad City Symphony is going to start out by playing a couple sets of their own music, and then Mr. Harmar, Superstar, will be coming out with his band, and the chamber orchestra will then play with them. It'll be really pretty exciting to hear.
Mm-hmm. And that last set, that final set, that's what you did the arranging for.
Yeah.
I know on your website you said that you are always open to fun projects. And and this one does seem particularly fun to me. Was there something that was really unique or different about this project for you?
Well, yeah, a couple things. First, I didn't know who Harmar Superstar was until I was asked by the Quad City Symphony to arrange the music. So that was pretty fun and challenging and different. Secondly, the music that they wrote has this really interesting combination of genres. So there's some you know, retro sounds of like some soul and even some I don't know, like almost modern disco. And then there's some other more modern dance kind of ideas. And then even some like 50s doo-wop influences that is in some of these songs. And it was just wonderful to think about, gosh, how am I going to write for a chamber orchestra to join them up there? I mean, you know, you think of like R&B and soul music, and you think of a horns joining in, right? So trumpets, maybe some trombones, saxes, definitely. There is one trumpet player in this chamber orchestra, but that's it. Everything else is this chamber orchestra. So this challenge to take this nice, very refined, but smaller sound, you know, and pair it with this high energy music was just something I had to jump in on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it all sounds so fascinating to me. And when I usually think about chamber music, I think of a smaller group, maybe a quartet.
Yes.
But
yeah,
this is larger. It's still considered chamber, but there are 22 musicians.
22 musicians. So, you know, when you think about chamber orchestra, one can also think of the instrumental music of Bach, J.S. Bach. So the Brandenburg Concertos come to mind immediately. So these are pieces that sound very full and rich, especially with the way that Bach would write, but also because of the combinations of instruments. So you have single winds, like a flute, oboe, clarinet, bassoon, two horns, a trumpet, a percussionist, a piano player, and then a smaller but still full component of strings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We spoke last week with Mark Zyla, who's playing the French horn.
Yeah, great guy.
He is fantastic. And, you know, I thought afterwards, I didn't ask him, I was wondering how they chose the particular symphony members to do this, because it is like what you're writing for them, you're kind of transforming the orchestral members into rock stars almost.
Oh,
they're
gosh.
Up on
I don't know.
You know,
that's up to them. They've got to take what I'm giving them and turn it into something spectacular. I hope that what I'm doing is allowing them to share the same space, to have fun with it, and then allows enough freedom in the parts that they can move, you know, within the parts a little bit. We'll see how that plays out.
I think going to be a lot of joy in this performance. Now you're arranging 6 of the 12 songs.
Yes.
And do you have a favorite one that you arrange?
Oh gosh. I think there's one called Sunshine that I really, really liked a lot. It had a very full arrangement already in the recording that was done, and I took that and tried to magnify it in the orchestra and bring out parts that were in the mix but really soft. So I had a lot of fun with that one. All of them, though, have some really endearing qualities to them, or just make you want to jump in and do some things, like move your booty, which is always a good thing to do at a concert.
Yeah, and I would encourage people who don't know anything about Harmar Superstar to look up his music videos, because they are just funny. My response was just to laugh my way through them. But he has a great voice. He has a tremendous range.
It's an amazing range. So, yeah, I didn't realize, just listening to him, what a range he had. Because before before you say yes to a project, you always want to do a little bit of homework. You know, say, oh, I'll get back to you on that. And so I was listening to it, and I said yes to this project, sat down in my studio with the recordings and started transcribing the music. So the way that I hope you and your listeners find this interesting. The way that I do these kinds of arrangements is, first I create a lead sheet, and that's a very simple outline that shows the chords and then the melody line with the lyrics. When I was transcribing what he was singing, I was really amazed at his vocal range. It's powerful throughout the whole range, and yet he can emote very quietly as well. It's really a very, very cool vocal instrument that he's got there. Yeah.
You know, I was curious about this. You're trained as a pianist. So how does someone who is, you know, really steeped and very knowledgeable about one instrument, how do you learn to write musical scores for a symphony and for such a large number of different instruments?
Well, I think that I'm still learning in many ways to write. I wrote my first orchestra piece when I was 20. And I'd already been writing for different instrumentalists and vocalists who just wanted me to write something for them, which was very nice of them. I just turned 50, so that's a good 30 years of writing for orchestras. But even before that, I had the sound of the orchestra in my head. But yeah, I did try to learn as much as I could on every instrument when I was an undergraduate at University of Arizona. But even now, I still go out of my way to try to ask performers what's possible if I have any questions, especially if I'm hearing some things in my head that are beyond the norm. Within the orchestrations that I did for the Harmar Superstar arrangements, there's really nothing that's outside of what would be normal. Again, the whole idea with this is to get the orchestra up there on the stage with him and for him to have fun with musicians that are up there and at ease. So I wanted the musicians to have something that they could look at really quickly and be able to just pour themselves in and play. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you have been composing for a very long time, so I suppose that you just become increasingly comfortable with that, I'm guessing. and you mentioned that you achieved your undergraduate degree in musical composition from the University of Arizona, and then you kind of did this upward northwest swing through San Francisco, where you had your master's, and then your PhD was at the University of Oregon, and that was also in composition.
Yes, all of those are all in composition. Hopefully I learned something along the way.
Well, I'm sure you have. Now, I was also interested to learn about the musical scores you've written for films.
Yes.
The film 50 Feet from Syria was shortlisted for an Academy Award several years ago. Mm-hmm. And then the film Lifeboat, for which you wrote the music, was nominated for an Academy Award this year in the documentary short category.
Yes.
And that's quite an accomplishment.
Yes, it is. Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that.
So are you drawn to films that have a social conscience? There seems to be a little theme, a little bit of a theme running through.
Yeah, I work a lot with the director of those two films that you mentioned. His name is Sky Fitzgerald. We met when we were both graduate students in Oregon. He's still living in Portland. And I get together with him every couple years, and we collaborate on another film. And we've been working together with either theater or film now for decades. So it's a wonderful relationship that we have. But I also work with other directors on films. One is a film that I'm scoring right now called Sons and Daughters of Thunder, which is being directed by the Rundles, and they're based right here in the Quad Cities. And this is about the abolitionists before Civil War, and I think it's a really important story, and I just wanted to be involved in that because, again, this is a very important social justice story that a lot of people have forgotten about. So it is wonderful to be a part of these films that is trying to do some good in the world.
Mm-hmm. And the Lifeboat film, remind us what that was about.
Yeah, that is about refugees trying to find a new life or escape something terrible, and looking for safety as they're crossing the Mediterranean Sea in literally just boats. People are cast off in these boats without any power, really without any water or any food at all, and they're cast adrift, and it's up to other people to go out and save them. And so this film documents one such journey over just a couple days out in the Mediterranean Sea, where two videographers are embedded on a boat or on a ship, saving people that are cast adrift, looking for help. And in this film, people are really confronted with the humanity, the individual humans who are trying to just seek the same kind of lives that you and I are able to lead.
Mm-hmm. When I was listening to you describing both of those movies, I was just wondering, does it come a little bit more easier, the writing of music, when you're thinking about a story that's so poignant, that's so painful, that's so this perilous journey? I don't know. I wonder about that.
Yeah. It might be more easy to write in response to something like that, but it's also difficult because I don't want to manipulate people's feelings. Mm-hmm. But I just, when I'm working on a documentary film, and I've done quite a few now, the music needs to help propel you from one thing to another, but again, without trying to take advantage of someone's feelings and kind of hint at or make them feel in one way or another, not at all. So there's a challenge there.
Right, because music is so powerful
that
it can manipulate our emotions.
Yes, it can,
a little bit.
And that's what, of course, I learned how to do that, training to be a composer so that I could emote and try to move people. And then here I am writing for documentaries, and I'm not doing that, right? So it's a bit more presentational, maybe, but at the same time, I think that the score that I wrote, particularly for Lifeboat, was very moving. I also released it as an album, and it stands alone musically, which is something I think that some of the other scores that I've done in the past, while I liked them, I don't think that they stood up that well, mm-hmm. right? But anytime I'm writing any kind of music, I do try to embody what's going on quite literally and feel my way through that. And then, of course, try to imagine a person who's listening or experiencing this for the very first time, how they might might be taking this, you know, and that gives me a clue as to what I need to be doing, right?
What was it like to attend the Academy Awards ceremony this year?
Oh, gosh, thanks for asking. That was quite a treat. You know, you're there in Hollywood, and that's a wonderful, crazy, amazing place. It was full of sunshine when we were there for that weekend, and you know, everybody was dressed up, just having a wonderful time. It was great because when you go into the Academy Awards, everybody is a potential winner. And so everybody has a very similar face, like, I'm so excited, you know, and everybody's joking around and smiling. And then as the evening goes on, some people are elated, but far more are taken down a couple notches. So it's a real interesting place to be. It's still a big celebration. And to just be nominated and to be part of the team that created something that was, you know, lifted up and shown to be something that people need to be paying attention to felt really good. It did feel a little bit strange, though, to be there in such a fancy night when what we were trying to do is, of course, help people that are in trouble.
Right. 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 These refugees that are in desperate circumstances.
Absolutely.
crossing that sea, hoping to be accepted by possibly a country that really doesn't want them, that may push them away or reject them.
Well, and that's
them.
Getting harder and harder. And Sea Watch, the organization that the director, Skye Fitzgerald, partnered with in this, is still doing a lot of good work. But they're being turned away now. From ports, and it's getting more difficult, as you can imagine. But, you know, in order to make the next film, and we are going to be making another film, we need to be talking with people like you about these projects, because you never know, the next person that I meet might be able to put us in touch with somebody else, right? Mm-hmm. And so going to the Academy Awards and talking with all those people was also another way to network for the right reasons, so that we could do better work that's even deeper and maybe more profound and touches and helps more people. So hopefully that'll work.
I hope so too. And there just are endless possibilities from that. But we as a community are really so proud of
you
with that accomplishment.
Thank you so much.
And I'm wondering, how do you balance all of your work, you know, all this composing and recording with your teaching and administrative work at St. Ambrose?
Right. Well, I do a good job of it sometimes. I do a poor job of it, I think, more often. There are some things that need to be prioritized any given moment, right? And so I try to turn my attention to that. I was just working on those arrangements for the Quad City Symphony for Harmar, and I spent two nights with only two nights sleep working on those. So that's the short answer to your question. The longer answer, of course, is that in our lives, there are different things that take us in and out of what we feel like we're called to be doing. There was a time when it was important for me to be an administrator for the music department at St. Ambrose, and I've been really happy to be chair for 8 years. I will tell you, and everybody listening, that I'm stepping down from being chair of the department after this year, and we'll be going back to a rotating chair position so that we get to share that a little bit. That's going to help me balance that load a little bit. It's been 7 years since I've released my last solo piano album. And this summer I'll be recording that, a new one. And, you know, finding that balance is a really tough thing. So something had to give a little bit as more creative ideas were really needing to come out. And so thankfully my colleague said, yep, it's time for you to do that. We'll step in. And so we're going to take turns over at St. Ambrose in that regard. But, you know, the teaching will be there. I love to teach. I guess, you know, another short answer would have been, because I like to make long answers, I guess.
No, it's perfectly fine.
Another short answer would have been, I love what I do. And I mean, it does feel like work. It does. But I love it, which is why I like to work on what I do all the time.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure for universities, they work hard at striking the right balance, because you do want an administrator, head of a department, to be renowned in that field. However, that suppresses the creativity of the person that you're promoting. So, so good. Well, hopefully you'll have some time to produce another solo album. Yeah. Where do you find your inspiration to compose music?
Oh, well, I've been improvising at the piano since my parents wheeled the piano into our living room when I was six. And so that's, 46 years now of exploring sound at the keyboard. So a lot of it is me just exploring at the piano. And that, but also, I love to go on walks. I love to travel and get inspiration. Sometimes ideas just come, just like anybody. So for me, a lot of people take a notepad out and they start doodling with a pen or a pencil, and some idea might present itself, or writing down words, or words come to people and they jot those down and that becomes a poem or something becomes a story. For me, phrases of music come together, or combinations of sound come to me, and I try to capture that the best I can.
How do you capture that? How do you write it down?
Great. I have notebooks with me everywhere I go. I've got one right here in this jacket right next to me with a pencil. I also have, I've been using my cell phone a lot lately to record sounds, because
you'll just hum along to a tune.
Sometimes, or I'll actually do solfege to it, which is, how musicians learn how to sight read and sing, and also to have that music just right inside you, so that I'll remember it. Thankfully, though, I have developed a pretty good musical memory, so I can remember it. If I can sing it or capture it in some way, though, it really helps speed up that process. Mm-hmm. Being disciplined, though, in the art that you've chosen is so important. So getting to my desk as often as I can on a regular basis, practicing regularly, is so important. I find inspiration just in that, really. So, there's a lot around me all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm going to touch just briefly on a couple projects you've done in the past. The number of musical adventures or projects that you've been involved in is so extensive that we can only really talk about a few. But you were part of the Sonoran Concert Trio for many years. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the Sonoran Concert was a new music ensemble that was based in improvisation only. I had met the percussionist in the group when we were both undergraduates, and I moved back to Arizona after living in California and Oregon, and this friend of mine, Todd, said, hey, let's get together and play some music and explore. Just have no preconceived notions. Just walk in, set up your keyboard, and let's go for it. And unbeknownst to me, he had invited somebody else in the room as well. And I'd never met this person before, and we started playing music. And that's how we met. And then we became, the three of us, really good friends, and we just kept exploring music in that way. So we
all improvisation.
Yeah, but that's how we came up with our ideas. We did try to do some loosely based classical covers, but we were doing so many exploratory things we found that actually kept us from being able to explore what we wanted. So we recorded a couple albums. We did some touring. And made a lot of great music. It's really great for me to hear groups that are really active now exploring improvisation at a level that we were doing then, which was 15 years ago and a little bit before that. So it's really great to see improvisation back in the classical realm after it being kind of gone for many decades. So that's what Sonoran Consort was. It was a great, great exploration of sound with two wonderful friends. Yeah.
You also composed a set of songs set to Wendell Berry's poems, and he's one of my favorite poets. So how did a project this diverse and unusual come about?
Yeah, you asked me about inspiration. because I am so inspired by the natural world, you know, it's pretty easy for me to be attracted then to the poets that also write about our connection to that. Mm-hmm. And Wendell Berry is one of the best that we have. And so a friend of mine lent me her poems in a book called A Timbered Choir, Selected Sabbath Poems of Wendell Berry. And I there were so many that resonated with me so deeply. That was a non-commissioned piece of music from me, which was, when I wrote it, really rare. But this music was just welling out of me. So I gave a couple other people who asked me for some music. I gave them a longer I asked for a longer deadline so that I could write these songs. And they're really, they were really labors of love for me. They didn't take very much time to come up with the concepts. It took a little bit more time to flesh out in some regard. And those songs have continued to live. I was just contacted this morning by a conductor who will be performing them with a choir this summer in Pennsylvania and a couple others in different parts of the country. So not only the music, but also that the poems, as you mentioned, what Wendell Berry, just really, really resonate with folks.
Mm-hmm. So the choir sing the poetry then?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and to me, there is a, I guess I would say there is a connection between poetry and music, both of those art forms distill emotion down to this very compact form.
Yes.
And can make you feel that in a very profound way.
Yes. And, you know, with poetry, you can, if you're reading it, you can reread that line. Or if you have ever gone to a live poetry reading, sometimes poets will read that line again. And in reading that line again, it gives us an opportunity to reflect on it, which is exactly why in music, I think, many times we as composers repeat certain lines to allow us to really take those parts in. Mm-hmm. Wendell Berry's poems have a lot of what we call cyclical ideas in individual poems, but also in his larger output. For me as a composer, it was really a fun thing to weave individual motives that I attached to certain ideas within his poems, kind of as mottos or motives that would recur, which also gives people the ability to immediately reflect. You know, they remember what that idea was. The tree swaying, and I would set it in a certain way with the voices. And when that comes back, you're immediately reminded of that tree swaying, but you're hearing some different words. So you're getting my interpretation of it too.
Bill Campbell, thank you so much for talking today. It was delightful.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Don't miss out on the opportunity to hear the Quad City Symphony Orchestra in concert with the R&B pop performer Harmar Superstar on Saturday, May 11th, with musical arrangements by the Quad City's own William Campbell. Doors open at the Rust Belt at 6 p.m. and the musical fun begins at 7. Tickets cost $25 and can be purchased online at molarnights.com or through the symphony website, qcso.org. This has been Carolyn Martin, talking art in the Quad Cities for WVIK.